Thank you. I appreciate that. Richard, right? Yes. All right. So I actually have a couple of announcements as well. People were just asking me. Tomorrow we're going for 5:30. Tomorrow is the closing ceremonies. Now we do have the raffles tomorrow. So make sure you get your raffle tickets. I see a lot of people getting your raffle tickets. We have fabulous prizes for the raffle. That's going to be at lunchtime tomorrow, correct?
In the vendor room.
In the vendor room will be the raffle tickets. That's the red raffle tickets. Tomorrow's closing ceremonies.
The first prize we're going to be giving away is this beautiful silver thing that was found in the woman's restroom. It appears to be some kind of either a foot or a hand holder of some kind. If this looks like something that you previously owned, you can have this now. Otherwise, I'm going to give it
to
Mia.
It's mine.
Oh, forget about giving it to Mia. I got 100, I'm 102, 102, 102, I got 103, I'm 103, 300, 400, 500, 106. Auctions are fake. $100, $100, $100, 106, 107. Hey, Mayor, Mayor, hey, lady from India, how much are you going to give for this? Made of silver. Real silver.
From the north of Spain.
I got 108. This does not look like anyone's here. Hey, it's going to the Hilton Lost and Found.
Yeah, we'll be raffling off all the Lost and Found items there. So yes, noon tomorrow after the morning sessions, in the vendor room, we will be giving away all the raffle prizes for the red tickets. Tomorrow's closing ceremonies are at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow. So a lot of people go home early on these conferences, especially these local ones like this where people live kind of in the areas and forget. So I want to do something special to make sure a lot of people stay late to see all those really awesome presentations that we put in on the second half of the day. So what I've decided to do is give away a massive, magnificent prize on the late, at the closing ceremonies. But you have to be there to collect it. And it's worth more than $10,000. Anybody who knows me, right, who's only for a while, I've got a lot of my elite members here, knows that I give away really good stuff. Right? But you have to be present. So what we'll probably do is probably everybody will take their like name badges and throw them into the bin, and I'll pull out one name badge. Whoever's there will get the prize. Fair enough? Very cool. Now, anybody who was at the Family Feud game last night, which was wow, was it fun?
Yeah.
Right? Was that fun or what? That was really awesome. Yeah. Big time. And it turned out, it was really weird. It's a good thing I wrote extra questions, because the red team won one, and the blue team won the other, and then this last round was a tie. So we had to have two fast money rounds, and both teams won. So I decided to give away the prize to everybody, right? Which was one of my $3,000 trainings. So I literally gave away 43,000 training yesterday, so it must be 120 bills. All right, so that's okay. It's all good. All right, that's part of the game. Anybody who, I promised you that, how do you get that prize? And I said, you see me at the table. That's the table over there for now, all right? So anybody who won the prize yesterday, you put your name, email, phone number, make sure you write legibly so I can contact you to give you your prize. Cool deal? All right, so anybody who was at the thing last night, do that over there. And tomorrow's prize is even better than that one. Like I said, it's pretty awesome. You will see what I'm talking about. It will change your life. All right. So, without further ado, and remember, tonight we're doing the show. You don't have any tickets for the show yet. And the dinner. I made sure you do that. The dinner was amazing last year. It's the same thing this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to see people get hypnotized and do stupid stuff. It's hilarious. We're going to have a lot of fun doing that. Okay. And I'm also going to teach. I always teach at the same exact time. us. Because, you know, hypnotized is actually kind of a cakewalk. It's almost like not count. It doesn't really count, right? So what I do is I'll still do the hypnotize people, obviously, but then I will show you exactly how I do the process throughout the entire show. That way you kind of learn at the exact time you see the show. I think that's always kind of a little valuable thing. I always do it that way. Fair enough? All right. So without further ado, our next keynote presenter, multi-challenge eye movement integration. He wrote the book on it. Right? But this is like NLP based, right? But it was before the guys really started, you know, this is like the real deal stuff. The other guys started copying the other stuff and then we're kind of like in doing that routine. This is the guy who really actually does it, invented it, made it. It's a really big, thick book. I looked at it already. It's incredible. I can't wait to use it myself. This is really awesome. So, and this material is solid. I'm serious. Everybody needs to be learning this. Everybody needs to be doing it. All right? So I want to have a thunderous round of applause. Mike Deninger, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Deninger. Thunderous round of applause. Here he is.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you very much. So first, I have a confession. I'm a little nervous, okay? I have performance anxiety. I'm sure some of you know what that's like, right? So I'm going to need your help. I need your help because I learned something yesterday when I went to Kaz's session, right? And she did this thing with the arms, you know? But I think I remember how to do it, but you're going to have to help me. Okay, so I'll start it out. You can stand up if you want to do that, but, you know, I'm a little awkward. Please, you know, just give me some of your energy because I want to get rid of this performance anxiety, okay? So it's kind of goes like, put your hands up in the air like you don't care. Put your hands up in the air like you don't care. Put your hands up in the air like you don't care. Put your hands up in the air like you don't care. Put your hands up in the air like you don't care. Now I have to calm myself down. Here we go. One, two, three. So, hi. I'm Mike Deninger, and Rich was correct. I did write that book. It was not something I set out to do. A little bit about me. I was a university administrator for 20 years. Successful. However, after about maybe 18 years, I lost interest in that, and it wasn't really giving me what I wanted, but I hadn't told myself that yet. So I was also a good drinker, and that's how I put myself to sleep at night, because I hated the shit that I was doing during the day, and I came home, and I thought, well, you know, the only way to get me to sleep was to give me the sedative, you know. Well, that fell apart eventually, obviously. So I stopped drinking. I came out of the closet. I quit my job. I went back to school. I got a master's degree in counseling. And a year later, I found out, really reconnected with sexual trauma that I had experienced when I was a young boy. Okay, so crash, boom. Out of that, though, I was actually in my master's degree when all of that happened. Out of that, I decided to leave the university, got early retirement, and went into private practice, where I specialized in trauma. One of the first things I did was I went to a hypnosis training academy in Silver Spring, Maryland. I was living in D.C. at the time. And I took every course I could get, about maybe 300 hours altogether, and eventually ended up with my NLP trainer certification, my hypnosis trainer certification, and eye movement integration certification. The first time I saw eye movement integration used, I was floored. I looked at it. I had every trauma method used on me that you can imagine. CBT, exposure therapy, everything. Hypnosis. Actually, hypnosis was the thing that helped me the most. But when I saw that, I thought, could this be true? I mean, I saw it, I believed the guy, he was my mentor, so I went out and I tried it with my own clients, and it did. It did. And I have to say, after all of my training and all of my work with hypnosis, that the eye movement therapy was the fastest trip to resolution of trauma symptoms. The fastest. And the one that stuck the most. The one that you didn't have to go back and redo after a while. Now, you know, there's a bunch of eye movement therapies out there. More than I can tell you because I don't know them all, honestly. But there's EMDR, of course. EMDR, unbeknownst to a lot of people, is NLP-based. In my book, I write about that some. I'm doing a second edition now, and I'm going to delve even deeper into that and explain in a logical way with facts and figures why EMDR was NLP-based. Because that's not a discussion that has been completed. I won't say any more about that because I have feelings. But anyway, you get what I mean. There's accelerated resolution therapy. Lanny Rosenzweig took a detour from EMDR because she thought it was too restrictive, and I think it is. And she added some Gestalt techniques and some scripts and stuff like that. It's called ART or ART. It is faster than EMDR, and I think it makes more sense than EMDR. But there's no book about how to learn ART. It's all training-based, and she'll sell you the scripts that she uses to how to do it. My desire was to bring out to everybody, let's say to the masses, it sounds lofty, right? But to people who actually can help people who have trauma and provide it to them without restriction. You know, when EMDR was introduced, people were not allowed to use it unless they had the EMDR training. Now, thank goodness, over the last 10 years, that's changed because there are a couple of lawsuits, and in mediation, the EMDR people kind of backed away, and there are now folks who are doing EMDR training with certification of their own, not from the EMDR group, and it's now much more, it's much easier to get EMDR training. However, and here's the big however, with EMDR, there are bells and whistles in there that don't need to be there. My belief is that when Francine Shapiro developed EMDR, she was, of course, heavily criticized by the NLP people because she lifted several models from NLP when she created EMDR. However, she insisted until she passed in 2019, I think it was, that it had nothing to do with NLP. I mean, that's just not true. The other thing about EMDR is that it has a real heavy cognitive component. So when you are talking with a client, by the way, I'm EMDR trained. When you're talking with a client in the beginning, you elicit a cognition from them, and they want it to be an I statement. I'm about this problem state. I'm whatever. And the way it works is you're steered toward a negative self-assessment. So I'm weak, I'm powerless, I should have done something to stop it, and so on and so on. And then after each eye movement set, and they use bilateral eye movements, right, at about eye level. After each eye movement set, they say, okay, on a score from 1 to 7, with 1 is you definitely agree with the statement related to how you would like to feel about this instead of the way you are feeling now. Let's say you start off with a 6, which is a high score. And after each set, they want to get you down to 1, which is where you completely agree with the desired statement that you came up with in the beginning. Okay? The problem with that, and the problem with all cognitive therapies, I think you've heard some things from Richard and some other folks during the conference today, that cognitive behavioral therapies are no more effective than talk therapy. In his book, Vanderkolk lays that out for us, gives us the studies that are based on that. There's a study by Steenkamp, who is at NYU, and a team of researchers, that took a look at 9 meta-studies of cognitive behavioral therapies. I think 5 were prolonged exposure and 4 were like cognitive processing therapy. And they came back and said, you know, we're not doing a great job. We're not. Because 2/3 of the people 6 months later still had PTSD. Okay, so I think, you know, with the talk about somatic therapies and the push that's coming with that, things are changing. Okay. The thing about eye movement therapies and about MEMI, as I will show you, because I call it MEMI, MEMI does not require you to come up with a desired thought, a desired cognition. In fact, we don't even test cognitions. Yeah, I mean, we can, but I tend not to. I ask for a thought in the beginning. What's your thought about that? And if someone gives me a feeling like, oh, I feel uncomfortable about that, I say, well, that's a feeling. How do you characterize that problem that you have? One woman that I worked with said, it's my fault. Okay, you know, that's a negative self-statement. We don't try to change it. We don't do cognitive restructuring to say, you know, that's an irrational thought. You've got to come to a place where you don't believe that anymore, and therefore your physical and your emotional reactions are going to subside. The thoughts change automatically. You don't need to do anything about it. If you desensitize the physical feelings, the somatic feelings, you desensitize the emotional reaction, and you desensitize the sensory information, basically the imagery. Sounds can be a part of a trauma response, but they almost never come up for some reason. I'm not sure why. Unless there is a particular sound that relates to what happened in the trauma. The woman who told me it's my fault in the beginning, and this is a video that we use in all of our trainings, complex PTSD person. She witnessed her husband in front of her jump out of a 15-story window and die on the pavement. The sound that she had was thud, right? After 2 sets of the eye movement there, the eye movements that we use 4 sets, basically. So there's not 15, 18, 20 sets like they would use in EMDR. And we don't visit a trauma more than once. I mean, there's no need to. If you have one problem state and you test that carefully in the pretest, and you do the 4 sets, it's desensitized. And you don't need to go back to it next week or the week after or the week after that. So that particular problem state is resolved. However, there are many more things that are attached to that problem state. Some habitual patterns that they have that are dysfunctional, not trusting people, getting into difficulty with relationships and so on. I'm talking primarily here about a complex PTSD person, okay? And after all of that, after I worked with her for 90 minutes, and I think the video in total is about 75 minutes, and you can see where she was when she started. She was dissociating. So, you know, when we were starting out, I was trying to get her not to focus on the trauma itself. I, like, give it a location. It's out there. We're here. I'll show you that when I walk through the protocol. But at the end of it all, I said, what are your thoughts about this now? And I said, do you remember what you said in the beginning? She said, no. Most people don't remember. I said, what's your thought about it now? And she said, it's a very unfortunate thing that happened. I said, do you remember what you said in the beginning? She said, no. I said, you said, it's my fault. And she went, ooh. Ooh. Okay. So that's a good example of the promise of this kind of therapy. It comes from NLP. It's the only eye movement therapy out there that is based on NLP, although some of them use techniques from NLP, but they don't admit to that, or they call it something else. So I'm honored to bring this forward now, because what you will see is the structure of experience model from NLP. And the way that I have framed it is there are four elements. There's a context: who, what, when, where, what happened. There's thoughts. We pretest for thought. There's feelings, which can be physical, emotional, or tactile. And there's sensory information, which is almost always just a visual image of what happened. And we use submodalities from NLP. And I think it's a unique way of using submodalities. In NLP, we usually talk about submodalities, you know. Oh, it's in color. Oh, okay. All right, that's nice. But we don't do anything with it, right? Well, we scale it. Okay, if it's in color and it's a movie and it's clear, then that image, how intense is it for you? 0 to 4. No intensity, mild, moderate, high, the highest. And after we do one eye movement set, we ask three questions. After the first set especially. Look out at that image now. Tell me, is it the same or different? No coaching. So that's the kind of reaction you will get from somebody. So you know, as the person who's leading the session, there is a change of some kind. They'll say it's different. Oh, act with surprise. Wow, it's different. How is it different? Well, the image, you know, it's fuzzier. Okay. And it's farther away. Oh, and it's not a movie anymore. It's kind of like a bunch of photos. Okay. Does that make it better or worse? That's the third question. Does that make it better or worse? It's better. Ah, great. What score would you give it now? You said it was a 4 in the beginning. It's now a 3. Ah, we're going in the right direction. Let's do another set. So that's the nuts and bolts of multi-channel eye movement integration. I am going to do a demonstration for you today, and I think we'll get right to that. How's that? Welcome, Katie. I do know Katie because we sat next to each other yesterday. And Katie's very engaging, right?
Yes, that's true.
And she said, oh, you're the big cheese, right?
I said headliner.
Headliner. anyway, so I asked Katie if she had a problem that she would like to, you know, change her reaction to. And we talked about it a little bit. And I don't know the complete extent of the problem, because the nice thing about MEMI, and this is different from almost all the other therapies, I almost never ask them to tell me their trauma story. If somebody comes in, I tell them, you don't have to tell me what happened to you. We can go all the way through and we can solve this without you ever telling me what happened, okay? Which is what I did with the woman I was talking about earlier. She told me a couple of things, but no more than that. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're going to go into presentation mode and demonstration mode, okay? I'm going to look closer. So, yesterday we met, right? Turn so we can see you in the camera. There we go. There we go. And you told me that there is a problem that you scaled at about an 8 out of 10. Is that right?
Yes.
Am I remembering that right?
Yes.
Okay. 8 out of 10. That's pretty high. So, when you think about that problem, right? Is it a problem that you had happened to you, or is it a problem that is relationship related, or what is the nature of it?
It happened to me.
It happened to you. Okay, I'm going to learn how to do this. All right. When you think about that problem, like I said, I'm not going to ask you to tell me the who, what, when, and where, okay? When you think about that problem, what thought comes up for you? What?
Humiliation.
I'm humiliated? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you probably definitely want to change that, right?
Yes.
Right. So what I was doing here was I was establishing rapport with her. Kind of quasi yes set, you know, not exactly the yes set, but quasi yes set. I was leading her in a number of questions where she would answer yes, yes, yes. If I completed the yes set, I would have asked her a question that was incorrect, and she would have said no, and I would have known that I had rapport with her. Okay. Now, the second step in our protocol is what we call an agreement to change. So I will ask you, is there any part of you that might not want to let go of these reactions that you have to this particular problem?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Definitely. You want to let go of this?
Definitely want to let go of this.
Okay. Great. So that's satisfied. And I will tell you that if there's not a congruent agreement to change, you will stumble later on. And even if you get it, like she did, very unequivocally, later on it might come up again. Oh, when you start talking about things that will be different for you, she might say, well, if I had to do that, I don't know if I'd want to do this. You might have to do a second agreement for change. Okay. So the third step is anchoring a resource. And this is traditional NLP anchoring a resource. So you said that you felt humiliated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the emotional word that you come up with when you think about this experience?
There's two words that come up, humiliated and ashamed. So there's outside and inside feelings.
Okay. So one that you projected outside is the humiliation, but inside you felt shame.
Yes.
Okay. I can see the emotion coming up in you.
Yeah.
So I don't want you to go there yet.
Okay.
Stay here with me. All right, good. We're going to say, actually, and this is actually step four, we're going to say that that experience is all the way out there on the back wall, okay? In other words, you're going to have a visual image of that out there. So don't look at it, look at me. Okay, so anytime I see you going there, I'll say, don't go there. Stay here with me, okay? All right, good. So to anchor a resource, if you felt ashamed, what would an opposite word to ashamed be? Opposite.
Confident.
Ah, confident. I love that. Confident. You look like you've had a lot of confident experiences in your life. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes. Say it loud.
I do. I have a lot of competent experiences in my life.
Good, good. Okay, so what I'd like you to do now is I'd like you to think about one moment in time when you were completely confident and you're absolutely sure. When you think about that back then, whenever it was, you were totally confident. Can you think of one?
I got it.
You got it? Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, this is one you can tell me about. Okay. So why don't you go ahead and describe it for me?
So I was homecoming princess at my high school, and I also played the clarinet, and the whole band went crazy for me. Like, the whole high school went crazy for Katie. So I've never felt so loved, and the crowd went wild for me. So I felt very loved and confident. Yeah.
Whoa. How about that? Wow. So what we're going to do is we're going to revivify that experience for you.
Okay.
We're going to bring it back to life.
I like it.
Yeah. Okay, so what I'd like you to do, you can do this with your eyes open or closed, okay? I'd like you to drift back in time and settle into that experience. You're back there. You're back there. And you are the person. The band is there cheering you on. Homecoming princess or queen?
Princess.
Princess, yes. I didn't want to get that wrong.
Don't get it wrong.
Okay, did you have a crown and everything?
Yes.
Yeah? What were you wearing?
A sweater.
A sweater, okay. You weren't in formal gown or anything?
No.
Okay, all right. Now, settle into that experience and tell me where you feel that experience reverberating in your body.
My shoulders.
Your shoulders. What's happening?
My shoulders feel like they're going back and they're relaxed. Shoulders are relaxing.
Okay. All right. And what I'd like you to do, tell me the nature of that sensation in your shoulders.
Strength.
Strength. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there a physical feeling related to that?
No tension. Just relaxed, calm.
Okay. Relaxed and calm. Okay. Do you feel that way, thinking about that memory, anyplace else in your body?
I feel warmth in my heart, thinking about that memory.
Warmth in your heart. I like that. Okay. Now you can close your eyes. And I want you to be in that experience. You're back there, young woman. And you're listening to all of the cheers. You're seeing all the faces. We lost our mic. How rude, right?
I'll just stay there. I'm still there.
Stay there, okay. So you're in that experience now. You have that feeling in your shoulders. It's strength. It's relaxed. I want you to imagine that you can spread that through your whole body. Let that feeling in your shoulders just kind of ooze over the tops, down your back, down your torso, through your arms, across your elbows, down into your hands, your wrists, your fingers, and let it continue spreading. Down through your hips, your legs, your knees, your calves, your ankles, your toes. It's a wonderful feeling. All of that adulation. You're at the top. You're at the top. And what I want you to do is take that all the way till its fullest extent. Feel yourself completely relaxed in that feeling. That's right. Every nook and cranny, every neuron, every muscle, every cell. That's right. Good. 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 Now, imagine that there's one word that can link that physical memory to you forever. What word would it be?
Sturdy is coming up. Sturdy.
Sturdy. Good. Close your eyes. imagine that all of those feelings that have spread to every nook and cranny, every muscle, every neuron, every cell have made you sturdy. That's right, Katie. Sturdy. 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 Now, anytime you hear me say that word, no matter what we're doing, if I say that word, you're going to remember what it was like to be back there, to be the princess, and to have the whole band cheering and shouting for you. Sturdy. Okay? Now you can slowly open your eyes, but bring back all those resources with you. Okay? Good. Thank you. So I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. What did you have for breakfast?
Eggs.
Eggs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So if I were to say the word sturdy, what happens?
I feel sturdy.
You feel sturdy.
I feel sturdy and taller.
You feel sturdy and taller.
Yeah, I feel like a foot taller right now.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, good. So that was a little awkward going in, but here's an anchor, a resource that she has. So if we run into some trauma along the way, I can say, remember, Katie, you're sturdy. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's reciprocal inhibition. It's what Volpe called it anyway. We're putting in a resource, a stimulus, that's going to compete with the problem state that we're going to locate out there. Okay? And the two of them can't coexist without one of them losing some strength. That's the idea behind it. Okay. So that was step three, anchor a resource. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, now step four, which I alluded to a little bit before. Something called therapeutic dissociation. Dissociation is not just a bad word, right? We can use it in an effective way. So therapeutic dissociation is when we ask the client to project that image out there. They're not in it. That's a younger you out there, okay? I'm not talking about the princess. I'm talking about the problem state, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the past. We're here in the present. That's far away, and we're close.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I might be saying, don't go there.
Mm-hmm.
Stay here in the present. Stay sturdy with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So now we're going to do a pretest. And basically, we're not going to talk about the context because I don't want to know the story. I don't have to know it. We're going to move on then to the thought we already have. What was your thought again?
I don't know.
I'm humiliated?
Oh, yeah, humiliated.
Yeah, I'm humiliated. Right, right. Okay, so we have a thought. And we'll check in to see if that's true later on. Okay? Don't go there. Were you going there?
No, I was thinking I can't even remember what we were talking about.
Okay.
It's really weird.
No, it's not weird at all. It happens all the time. Okay. So let's move on to sensory information, okay? There is an image of that experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just one image?
Yes.
Okay. Is it in color or black and white?
Color.
Okay. Movie, still photo?
Slow-moving movie.
Okay. Slow-motion movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it clear or fuzzy?
Clear.
Is it framed so it's like this, or is it panoramic so you can see out and around?
Panoramic and immersive.
And immersive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Is that pretty strong for you?
Mm-hmm.
So on the intensity scale, from 0 to 4, how strong would that be?
3.8.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you've thought about this, haven't you? Yeah. She saw the demonstration yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about, there are sounds too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. What's the sound?
Laughing.
Laughing, okay. And is that loud or soft?
Medium.
Medium. Okay. Like normal?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there anything else distinctive about the sound?
No.
No. Okay. How strong is that from 0 to 4, the sound?
2.
So it's moderate. Mm-hmm. So when a score is 2, we don't need to worry that much about it unless it unless it gets worse later on. Okay. So then let's move on to physical sensations, okay? We already know that you have a physical reaction, right? Where is it?
It's in my chest, traveling up into my throat, like a squeezing in my throat.
Okay, mm-hmm. A tightening in your throat?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other physical feeling?
No, just that.
Okay. And what score would you give that?
3.8.
Wow. Okay, let's move on now to the emotional feeling, which you said you felt ashamed. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what score would you give that?
3.
3, all high scores. Okay. Would you like to get to work?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I'd like to get to work, too. Okay. So what I'm going to have you do in a minute is I'm going to have you project that problem state out there. We're going to do some eye movements, and then we're going to stop. We'll take a short, quick break in between, and then I'll ask you to look at it again and tell me whether it's the same or different. Okay? So for folks here, in case you use Zoom a lot, I don't use this normally with in-person clients, but I will use this on Zoom because then your client can see the movement on the screen. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to project that image out there and put your eyes on the light. That's right, follow it wherever it goes. And you know, this is like splitting your awareness. You can think about that problem state all the way across the room, but you're watching this light in the foreground. Okay. Good. Good. Very good. Okay, I'm going to take it away. Say, pumpkin.
Pumpkin.
Good. Break state. Okay. Now, what I'd like you to do is look out there again. Tell me if it's the same or different.
It's different.
It's different. How is it different?
When you were doing this, it was like it erased that movie.
Say that again?
When you were going like this with the light, it's like that was being erased. And okay. It went down to a zero. Yeah.
Wow. I see some emotion in you.
Yeah,
that's good, huh? I mean, I hope the emotion is good, right?
It's good.
It's good, okay. Yeah. All right. I did notice that when I was doing the eye movement, you stalled in the middle a little bit, and I kind of had the idea that you were trying to see if it was changing or not. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So you'll find out after you do this for a while that sometimes people will sneak a peek in the middle.
It was like I was trying to hold on to it. I was like, I see it, but it was being erased. And then also the feeling in my heart was being erased as you did that. It was like a level going down. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's something. Oftentimes after the first set, you don't see a big difference. However, she definitely did. Mm-hmm. Now, we also use a 10-point scale, a SUD scale, mm-hmm. right? So let's say that when you started out and you first put it up there, it was at a 10, mm-hmm. because that's the way you usually remember it, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. That's just one change. So now we're going to go on. That's the visual image, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Okay. The sound was at a 2, so we're not going to worry about that right now. Mm-hmm. You said that something changed here. Mm-hmm. What changed?
It was like a level like water going down in my heart. My heart feels neutral right now.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And is that better or worse?
It's a lot better. And I was trying to retrieve the memory from my database, and I can't even bring it back up. Like, it's, like, not retrievable at this time.
You can't remember it? I mean, you can remember it. You know something happened, right? But you can't what?
The vividness of it is no longer there anymore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the vividness relates to the imagery. Mm-hmm. Vivid imagery, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and what about the feeling of ashamed?
I don't feel any ashamed.
You don't feel ashamed at all?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to ask you, what's your thought about that experience now?
It happened, and I judge myself based on what happened, but it feels external, like it feels more separate from me. Like this person did that and that Katie needed to feel responsible for something like that.
Okay. So you've changed your whole way of interpreting that experience, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So we've done just one set. I'm going to do a second set just so you see how it goes. There are four altogether. They get more and more complicated, but especially for the most difficult trauma cases. Okay, and when you have a real serious trauma case, it can go like this until it finally collapses. Usually set three or set four is when that will happen. Okay, let's do set two. So things have changed, right? Mm-hmm. But you're going to project that experience in the image out there as it is now. Okay?
There's no image. I'll do it.
Say that.
I said there's no image. I can't even pull it up again. It's just kind of like swirly. It's not even an image.
All right. Well, maybe there's no need to go on.
We should still do it just for demonstration purposes.
Thank you, Katie.
Will you complete the set? I'll be a good sport. I'll do it.
Here we go. Out there. Eye on finger. There you go. Now we're going to do some triangles. And the reason why I wanted to do this is to let people know that we also use metaphors, reframes, embedded commands. And some of the eye movement patterns, like sometimes we say, and let's reverse it. Meaning, let's reverse all those symptoms. Or we might say, you're not sure when, but you're looking forward to the time when your thoughts about this will change. Okay. So I did two things there. Reversing, and the reversing emotion is a metaphor for reversing symptoms, and sometimes I'll be more specific than at other times, depending on what the client presents. And I also gave an embedded command about the self-talk that she has. You know, the thought, the self-narrative that she has about that. When I say, you may find that embedded command, your thoughts about this will change. Okay? And the reason for that is in the eye movement model, this is where self-talk is. Okay? The eye movement model is not perfect, but I can tell you from my experience that eye movements work, number one. And two, eye movements are organized and systematic. They are not random. We have some research that says that. And the research that supports that was done by people who were criticizing the eye movement model. They said, you know, and my belief is that some people go up to the left when they're recalling visual images. Some people will go up to the right, and Diltz and Bandler and folks in the NLP field thought that maybe because you're left-handed, so maybe 50% of the time if you see somebody who has them reversed and you ask them, are you left-handed, they'll say, yeah. The other 50%, they'll say, no. So I think the organization of the eye movements is helpful. But the most important thing is to know that for that person, this is how their eye movements are organized. Okay? So if you see them recalling visual past information up to the right, then that's the way that their eye movements are organized. Okay? However, behind all of this in NLP, these are all pattern interruptions. They're simple pattern interruptions. But let's be clear, in the last 5 years, we have hard science that says that when fear memories are installed in a person, there's a neurohormone that stimulates the amygdala and it starts going like this. It oscillates. And they've seen this with fMRI. They've also seen it with ultrasound technology. And when you do simple eye movements, after you've installed a fear memory, like if I were to shout, I did this yesterday and I scared the group. I went, Now you have a fear memory and your amygdala is going like this, right? Just doing simple eye movements will calm the amygdala. Okay. Then they did research on mice and they did it on college students and they found out that that's true. If you have divided consciousness, you have a fear memory installed in somebody, and you just do bilateral eye movements, that's the only test they did. That will calm the amygdala. That will also calm the symptoms. And the more the amygdala is calmed, the lesser the lesser severe the symptoms will be. Okay, hard science. So I think we're onto something. We have one more thing to do, though. So this is called future rehearsal.
Oh, see, I'm wondering, this was a very young memory, and I'm wondering how it's going to collapse future events, because I'll just tell you, I was 4 years old at the time, and I'm like, what other memories is this touching? So you just, I think that's what's next.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So we have desensitized it today, mm-hmm. And I'm confident that we have recreated the memory for you. Mm-hmm. It's like, in computer terms, it's like we installed a patch in the program, and we're skipping over the old problem, and now we've got a new version that she's always going to remember going forward. She'll always remember it the way she's remembering it now. So the future rehearsal is designed to test the durability of what we did in the future. So there may come a time in the next week, 2 weeks, month, or maybe at a family gathering or something like that, when you'd be reminded of this experience. Am I hitting something?
Thanksgiving's coming up.
Okay, so put yourself in that time and tell me what you think it will be like.
Sturdy.
Yeah. Sturdy. I've gotten the message that we have less than 1 minute, so I'm going to wrap up now. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.